Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia said his country will develop nuclear weapons if its rival, Iran, does. Prince Mohammed bin Salman told the American television network CBS, Saudi Arabia does not want to acquire any nuclear bomb. But without a doubt, if Iran developed a nuclear bomb, we will follow suit as soon as possible. The CBS report with the prince will air on Sunday. The prince's statement raised the chances of a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. Saudi Arabia, a Sunni Muslim kingdom, and Iran, a Shiite-majority republic, are longtime rivals. The two countries are backing opposing groups in armed conflicts in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Yemen. Saudi Arabia has criticized the 2015 nuclear deal between world powers and Iran. The deal lifted economic sanctions on Iran in exchange for limits on its nuclear energy program. U.S. President Donald Trump has described that agreement as a terrible deal. The United States will restart sanctions against the country unless Trump issues new waivers to suspend them on May 12th. An American withdrawal from the nuclear deal would likely lead to the restarting of nuclear development in Iran. Saudi Arabia is currently developing a civilian nuclear energy program to reduce its economy's dependence on oil. Saudi Arabia, the world's top oil exporter, has previously said it wants nuclear technology only for peaceful uses. But it is unclear whether it also wants to enrich uranium to produce nuclear fuel. The process can also be used to produce atomic weapons. The United States, South Korea, Russia, France, and China are competing for a deal to build the country's first two nuclear reactors. American companies can only transfer nuclear technology to a country that has signed an agreement that rules out domestic uranium enrichment and the pre-processing of spent nuclear fuel. Such steps can have military uses. So far, Saudi Arabia has refused to sign any agreement that would take away its ability to one day enrich uranium. This has been at the center of worldwide concerns over Iran's nuclear program, which enriches uranium domestically.
As Egypt prepares for a presidential election, the country continues to struggle with security in the Sinai Peninsula. The election will take place from March 26 through March 28. President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi is expected to easily win a second term in office. However, Egypt's military remains in a campaign against extremist groups in the Sinai, including the Islamic State group. The IS is suspected in a December attack against the Al-Arish airbase. Officials believe Egyptian government ministers were the targets. Reuters News Service reported that the attackers used a laser-guided missile to destroy a helicopter. Military and police officials say a Russian-made missile was fired from a house near the base. The ministers were not hurt. The military noted the attack in December, but officials did not comment on it since then. The Islamic State is using the Sinai area as a hiding place. The group has been forced out of Libya, Iraq, and Syria. In January, the United Nations released a report that spoke of the resilience of the Islamic State in Egypt. Reuters reports that the Egyptian military has said it had killed more than 1,800 rebels in the area since 2014. In February, the army launched an offensive in the Sinai. It said it killed many suspected rebels and detained hundreds of others. The military said the Army, Navy, and Air Force cooperated in a new way in the campaign. Sisi's supporters say the security situation now is better than it was in the years after the Arab Spring uprising of 2011. Sisi's office did not answer requests for comments on the current security situation. The attack on the helicopter took place 3 weeks after Sisi ordered his generals to use, in his words, brute force against jihadists. Egypt's military is using warplanes, tanks, and troops that have fought Islamists in the Sinai for years. Some experts say the army should use more effective methods that are less likely to anger civilians in the area. One Western diplomat said Egypt should employ more targeted intelligence-based tools for fighting extremism. However, a military official told Reuters that Egypt's security forces are succeeding. He also said civilians would be paid for material damages caused by the fighting. The army says more than 10 soldiers have died in the recent Sinai operation and that hundreds have died in recent years. The Islamic State has said that it killed many soldiers in the last month in roadside bomb attacks. The group is said to have released an unconfirmed video of the attack on the airbase. The governor of Sinai announced after the attack that a secure area would be extended around the base. But people Reuters spoke to questioned whether the measures would help, saying they would only make people angry. I'm Mario Ritter.
In the song Whenever, Wherever, popular Colombian singer Shakira tells us about a long-distance romance. At one point in the song, she asserts that time and distance are of little importance when two people are meant for each other. In the song, Shakira uses the words whenever and wherever, meaning it doesn't matter when and it doesn't matter where. From popular songs,
To written and spoken communication, English speakers use what are called everwords quite a lot. Today, we will explore the meanings and uses of these words. Each one is formed by taking what we call WH question words, like when and where, and adding the word ever to them. A common structure for ever words is ever word plus subject plus verb. And as you will see, each word has two main meanings, and they are not very different. Let's start with the word whatever. The word whatever can mean anything at all, or it doesn't matter what. Listen to an example.
You can have whatever you like.
This sentence means you can have anything that you like. Whatever also means it doesn't matter what. Listen.
Whatever you do, don't come home after sunset.
This means I don't care what you are doing, just don't come home after sunset. In this case, whatever you do is not a necessary clause, but is used to emphasize when to return home. Our next ever word is whichever. The word whichever can mean any one of a group, or it doesn't matter which. English learners may ask about the difference between whichever and whatever. Here's what's different. Whichever is used when identifying from a set of choices that are known to both the speaker and the listener. Listen.
Those three hats are the nicest. Choose whichever you like best, and I'll buy it.
This means choose any one of the three hats, and I'll buy it. The word whichever also means it doesn't matter which. Listen.
I'm not sure whether I want to go to Martinique, Guadeloupe, or St. Lucia.
Whichever trip you choose, I'm sure you'll get lots of time in the sun.
The second speaker is saying, it doesn't matter which trip you choose. I'm sure you'll get to spend a lot of time in the sun. Our next ever word is whoever or whomever. Unlike other ever words, this word has two forms. The word whomever has become less common over the years because of the difficulty people have had knowing when to use it. Today, whoever is more popular in American English. The word whoever can mean any person, or it doesn't matter who. Listen.
Whoever told you that didn't know much about cars.
This means any person who gave you that piece of information did not know much about cars. Whoever also means it doesn't matter who. Listen.
Whoever you go with, make sure they bring their cell phone.
The speaker is saying that it doesn't matter who you go with. Make sure they bring their cell phone. Now we'll tell you about wherever, whenever, and however, and give you some sentence examples. Our next word, wherever, can mean in, at, or to any place, or it doesn't matter where. Listen to an example.
Home can be wherever you find happiness.
And here's another example.
Wherever the boy went, the dog followed.
Tell us what you think each sentence means. On to our next ever word, whenever. This word can mean at any time or it doesn't matter when. Here's one example.
I'm going to stay for another hour. Feel free to leave whenever you want.
And here's another.
Whenever you have time, let's sit down and have some pie.
In the second example, the word whenever is used simply to emphasize that this can happen when the person has time. Replacing whenever with the word when would express the same basic meaning. Now let's move on to our final ever word for today, however. As you may know, however can have a few meanings, including being a synonym for the word but. But today, we'll talk about its meanings as an ever word. However can mean in any way, or it doesn't matter how. Listen to an example.
We will help you however we can.
Here's the second example.
However you do it, please finish it by 10 tomorrow morning.
So, how can you become comfortable using ever words? The next time you're reading something, listening to a song, or watching a film or television show in English, look for examples of ever words. Then, try using them in your everyday conversations. If you practice these words enough, you'll be able to use them whenever and wherever you like.
Whenever, wherever,
I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. 2 years of a bitter, bloody civil war started to show their effects on both the Confederate States of the South and the Union States of the North. Both sides began to feel the pressure of the costly struggle. The South, however, felt the pressure more severely because it was weaker in troop strength and industrial strength. Morris Joyce and Jack Moyles discuss the early summer of 1863 in the American Civil War.
In 1863, the Confederate States were becoming short of supplies. Food and guns were difficult to find to keep the Confederate armies in the field. Men were also needed, more and more men. There seemed to be no end to the demand for men to fill the places left empty by dead and wounded soldiers. Many in the South were heavy of heart, and hope among them slowly started to sink. The war was tiring. Its suffering was more than they could bear. And the situation in the West made matters worse. Union armies were on the move in the states of Mississippi and Tennessee. Their successes were becoming a serious threat. They might soon win control of the whole Mississippi River. This would split the states of the Confederacy and might end its very existence. Something was needed to raise up the spirits of the South, to break the pressure of Union armies.
General Robert E. Lee believed that he had the answer, an invasion of the North. This, he felt, would throw fear into the people of the North and weaken the Union war effort. Lee had organized an army of 75,000 men at Fredericksburg, Virginia, halfway between Washington and Richmond. Lee began moving his men June 3rd. They marched northwest into the Shenandoah Valley. The valley led north to the Potomac River. Across the river was the narrow neck of western Maryland, then Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania was the target. Its rich farmland produced plenty of food, enough to feed Lee's hungry army for the summer. Standing in the way of Lee's army was a small Union force at Winchester in Northern Virginia. There were only 7,000 Union soldiers, and they had no idea that the Confederate army was nearby. The Confederates easily defeated them. More than half of the Union troops were captured. The others fled. Now, there was nothing to stop Lee from marching into Pennsylvania. The huge Army of the Potomac was behind him, near Washington. The Union commander, General Hooker, had to keep the army between Lee and Washington to prevent the Confederates from seizing the national capital. Lee's army crossed western Maryland and entered Pennsylvania. His soldiers found the Pennsylvania countryside very different from Virginia's. Virginia had been a battleground for 2 years, and the land showed it. Many of its farms had been destroyed. Its stores were empty. Pennsylvania had not been touched by the war. Its big farms were rich. Its towns and villages were full of food and goods of all kinds. The hungry, poorly clothed soldiers could not believe their eyes. This was the land of the enemy, they cried, and they could take whatever they wished. But General Lee said no. He said supplies could be taken only by Confederate supply officers. And, he said, they must pay in Confederate money for everything they took.
Lee did not want to anger these people in Pennsylvania. Many of them did not support the Union war effort. Some of the rich farmers said openly that they did not care who won the war. They said they only wanted to be left alone. Lee was sure that many in the North felt the same way. There had been signs that people were growing tired of the war. Coal miners in eastern Pennsylvania had shown their feelings toward the war a few months earlier. They rose up against a new law drafting men into the Union Army. The miners did not want to fight. They refused to join the army. They rioted and attacked officials who tried to take them. Soldiers were sent to the mining areas to put down the riots.
Farmers in nearby Ohio also rebelled against the draft law. They refused to be drafted. Instead, they took guns and battled soldiers who came to arrest them. Feelings against the war were growing stronger, not only in Pennsylvania and Ohio, but also in several other farm states of the North. These areas saw a growing support for a peace party, a political party opposed to the war. Leaders of this movement were Democrats called Copperheads. They got this name because they wore on their coats a copper penny with the head of an Indian.
The chief Copperhead was a former Ohio congressman. His name was Clement Vallandigham. As a member of Congress, Vallandigham criticized the war and the Republicans. He told them, "The war for the Union is, in your hands, a most bloody and costly failure." War for the Union was abandoned, and war for the Negro was openly begun with stronger effort than before. "With what success?" Vallandigham asked. "Let the dead at Fredericksburg and Vicksburg answer." Vallandigham said he wanted peace, and he wanted it immediately. He offered a simple program: stop the fighting, make a ceasefire, and let some friendly foreign nation negotiate peace between North and South.
After he lost his seat in Congress, Vallandigham opened a campaign to become governor of Ohio. He traveled all across the state, speaking out against the war. He said Republicans did not want peace. He said they wanted to fight until every black man was free. The Union military commander for Ohio was General Ambrose Burnside, a former commander of the Army of the Potomac. After losing the Battle of Fredericksburg, Lincoln removed Burnside as Army commander and sent him to Ohio. Burnside was worried. Too many people in Ohio opposed the war. He believed that much of what was being said and done in Ohio was close to the crime of treason.
Burnside announced several new measures to quiet the opponents of the war. One of these orders limited the right of citizens to criticize government military policy. Another declared that statements of support for the enemy would be punished as treason. Vallandigham refused to recognize Burnside's right to give such orders to civilians. On May 1st, he made a campaign speech to a big crowd at Mount Vernon, Ohio. He denounced Burnside's orders and spoke of the president as King Lincoln. Vallandigham claimed that Lincoln was using the war to become a dictator. He said Lincoln did not want peace, that the president had rejected peace offers from the South. Once again, he said the war was not a struggle for the Union, but a fight to free the slaves of the South. And he said, "Men of Ohio, who let themselves be drafted into the Union Army, were no better than slaves themselves."
Burnside had sent several Army officers to listen to the speech. When they reported what Vallandigham said, Burnside ordered his arrest. Without question, the man had violated the general's orders. Late the next night, soldiers went to Vallandigham's home in Dayton. They knocked on the door and said they had come to arrest him. Vallandigham called for help and refused to let the soldiers enter. They broke down the door, seized him, and took him to a military prison in Cincinnati. A few days later, Vallandigham went on trial before a military court in Cincinnati.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.